Hello, kiddies. It's me, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And I'm doing a big shout out to my good fiend, Jason, the Solomonster. Well, Jason, good first name, by the way. Your bro, Jonathan, tells me it's your birthday coming up. Well, the Crypt Keeper would just like to say many more screams come true. And I hope you have a long, healthy life and even a longer, healthier death. Because let's face it, you can take it with you.
It's business time, baby.
The Solomonster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
You're like fighting a woman?
Oh my god, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo! I am a one-man wrecking crew.
How freaking cool is that? Getting a birthday shout out from the Crypt Keeper himself. That was a very cool thing to wake up to this morning. And he still got the laugh. That iconic laugh. What a week it has been. And it's not over yet. House of Glory last night was a blast, as always. If you've never been to a show, you're really missing out. Not just the talent, but a lot of the big names that we had in the house last night. The villain, Marty Scurll, was there doing a meet and greet. Rikishi and Melina in the ring to start the show, dancing their asses off. Melina looks great. And Mick Foley, who I believe missed the meet and greet, but was able to make it later in the show, made a surprise appearance wearing the same exact clothes he wore on SmackDown the night before, out to make a big announcement about a major new investor in House of Glory. We don't know who it is yet, but it's going to be a big year ahead. I'm glad to be part of it. And in the house for our next show coming up, November 16th, that's a Saturday night, WWE Hall of Famer Kurt Angle makes a very special appearance at the NYC Arena. Also great to see some of you at the meetup on Friday at the Monroe Pub with JD, Draper, Julian Cannon. I want to say thank you to those guys as well. I cannot think of a better way to spend my birthday than doing a podcast here in the morning and a live stream at night for a pay-per-view that WWE cannot even be bothered with outside of the two Hell in a Cell matches. So I'll do some quick predictions here in a bit. But first, got to show some love to Audible and a brand new book that is now available on Audible for those of you who are interested, especially those old school wrestling fans. Soul Man, The Rocky Johnson Story is now available for free when you sign up for an Audible trial using our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You get one free audiobook of your choosing you get to keep no matter what, even if you cancel before your trial is up. The book belongs to you. It's called Soul Man, The Rocky Johnson Story. It has a foreword by his son, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And as you would imagine, it is about the life and career of Rocky Johnson, who was at one time a big star in WWE and is a WWE Hall of Famer. So if you want to pick up his book, you can do so for free using our link. Also, I want to just remind people that up in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees, you go to prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. We have our Sound Off store, our Sound Off shop. Tons of t-shirts in there, including two Halloween shirts. One in red, one in charcoal. It's a special Halloween-themed Sound Off logo. You can get those shirts right now in our store. If you get them now, they'll ship to you before Halloween. So definitely pick those up if you are a Halloween fiend like I am. And if you want to become a PayPal VIP, you can do so on the Solomonster.com PayPal button. PayPal link is on the right-hand side of the page. I want to say thank you to all of our VIPs this week who did donate $10 or more, and even the ones who didn't. I appreciate everybody. I want to say thank you to the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Killshot Keith Hart, Radiant Ray Wrighton. Always nice to see Ray. Saw her last night at the HOG show. Ryan the Dagger McTaggart. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. Pull No Punches. Alan Ragasa. Steven Handyman Halistic. The Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard. Velvet Revolver Robert Murray. Max the Axe Velado. The Chicago Slayer. The Chicago Screamer. We have the Chicago Slayer versus the Chicago Screamer. Ian Noel Camelotes. The Maniac Moderator Jeff Lipman. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep. Last Man Standing Al Alvarez, a fellow New Yorker, transplanted in Japan, who is also celebrating a birthday this week, so happy birthday to you as well, Al. B-Mac Attack, Bernard Hicks, wants to give a shout-out to his mom, who recently celebrated her birthday. A lot of birthdays, a lot of Libras out there. Who's part of the Libra Club with me? It's the best club to be part of. And he also wants to give a shout-out to his best friend, Melanie, who has been cancer-free now for 3 years and is expecting her first child, a baby boy. So congratulations to Melanie. Forgotten fan, Frankie Blyce. That was the nickname I gave him a long time ago. He was a lapsed fan. Well, he is forgotten no more. Now that he has AEW, he has taken WWE off of his DVR going forward. So I shall call you here from here on out, Elite Fan, Frankie Blyce. He's also a Libra like me and celebrated his birthday yesterday. It's just a birthday crew here. So happy birthday to Frankie. And on iTunes, thank you to Bro Wyatt, which is some kind of weird hybrid, it seems like, between Vince Russo and Bray Wyatt. There's a visual for you. And Charlie Ward says that the one time that he and his son make time, the one thing they make time to do together each week as he gets older is to sit down and listen to the podcast. So I love hearing stuff like that, so thank you to Charlie. Quick note on the, there's a whole bunch of things to get into here. And I don't have a mailbag planned for this week. Just because, frankly, I ran out of time in preparing for this show. There was just so much to do. But also, I am planning on debuting a new feature. Hopefully that will debut this week at some point on the YouTube channel. A brand new feature called Sound Off Inbox, which is basically a YouTube version of the mailbox. That does not mean I will not be doing any more mailbag questions here on the podcast, but I will be doing a lot less in favor of being able to hopefully give more time to it on the YouTube channel. So that's something to watch out for. But a quick note on the NWA tapings. I don't have any spoilers here. I'm not going to give away any spoilers. But they did tape television in their new studio. I believe it's down in Atlanta. I saw the still photos. I'm sure some of you did. It looks very authentic. It looks as authentic as any kind of studio show that I have seen since the NWA days back in the 80s. And Crockett and all that classic programming. As far as just the kind of recapturing the look and the feel, they taped a couple of title matches. The show will be called NWA Power, and it debuts this Tuesday, airing at 6.05 p.m. Eastern on the NWA Facebook page and the NWA YouTube channel, so everybody can watch, being that it is online. I'm very curious to see how it looks and sounds beyond the still photos that I saw. I know there's already a ton of wrestling each week, but I would say give it a watch and let me know what you think and if you think it's something that you could see yourself sticking with each week. We have another Jeff Hardy arrest. Another mugshot to add to his collection. TMZ broke the news that Hardy was arrested on Thursday night in North Carolina for DWI, driving while impaired, his second DWI offense in as many years, as well as driving with a revoked driver's license. That's nice. The last DWI, Jeff was in a car accident. His blood alcohol content was 0.25, more than three times the legal limit. And he was just arrested in July for public intoxication. At least then, if you think back to when he was arrested a few months ago, he wasn't behind the wheel of a car. This time, he was. He was behind the wheel. And if you've heard me talk about these kinds of stories in the past, I have very little tolerance for this kind of thing myself. You know, we're not talking about one beer. We're not talking about one glass of wine. He's been out since having knee surgery in May. He and his brother Matt, they were forced to vacate the SmackDown Tag Team titles right after they won them. He underwent knee surgery. He's been out ever since. And WWE, they copy and pasted their usual statement, which is Jeff Hardy is responsible for his own actions. And that was it. A one-line statement from WWE. His brother Matt echoed that statement and is clearly very irritated by all of this. And really, how can he not be? I mean, you know, he's so closely associated with his brother, the Hardy Boys. They're linked. They're forever linked. And so every time Jeff gets into trouble of some kind, and Matt knows what that's like because Matt went through a period of his life where he was getting in trouble and he was in a dark place and he was going down a road that, you know, there was almost no coming back from. So Matt is really this great redemption story where he was able to overcome those demons and get his career back, and he hit it big with the Broken Matt character in TNA. Had this big comeback to WWE, that big WrestleMania surprise return. He's got a wife, he's got two kids, another on the way. You know, he's building a little Hardy clan for himself over there. And it's a great story. And Jeff, unfortunately, is not such a great story. And so every time something happens with Jeff, I'm sure Matt gets a ton of tweets and a ton of messages from people. What's going on with Jeff? How's Jeff? And if I were Matt, if that were my brother, I'd be pretty irritated by the whole thing too. So I can understand it, but this is what he tweeted. He said, since so many have asked me about my brother, I love my brother. I want him to be happy and healthy. I've expressed that to him as much as I can. Jeff has to make decisions about his own life. I have to focus on my two boys and soon to arrive son. I can only control my actions. And he put the word my in all caps. You know, the old expression, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, I think applies here. I don't know how much more of this WWE can tolerate. It is embarrassing for them to have to keep putting out statements like this. You know, I remember the Umaga situation where he had his own demons. And I don't remember if it was alcohol or drug related or what it was, but WWE tried to force him to go to rehab. It was that bad where they tried to force him to go to rehab and he refused. And he forced their hand. They had no choice. So they fired him. And his story didn't end well. Now, I would like to see Jeff Hardy's story end well. This company needs to draft a policy. It's sad that it's even come to this, but between Jeff and the Usos, between Jeff and the Usos alone, you could put together an entire scrapbook, an entire photo album of mugshots. They need to put down on paper a policy, specifically in reference to alcohol abuse and arrests for DUI and DWI. You know, I don't know if it's a two strikes policy, if you make it a three strikes policy, but something so that it's not a case where, you know, if it gets to a point where they're going to fire Jeff, clearly they're not, it doesn't look like they're going to here, but let's say they get to a point where he gets arrested again and they just say, you know what, we have to get rid of this guy if he keeps getting arrested for DUI or DWI. You don't want to be in a situation where you let go of him or someone else and then people say, well, wait a minute, that's not fair. How come they got rid of Jeff or how come they got rid of this person, but Jimmy Uso still has a job? How do you reconcile that? How do you measure that? So I think you need to have a uniform policy that applies to everybody when it comes to this sort of thing, since it happens so often. You know, and I know they're independent contractors, and that's where that WWE statement comes from. Well, they're independent contractors, so he's responsible for his own actions. So the only policy they have prohibits the use of alcohol for a 12-hour window before they perform. That is outlined in the WWE substance abuse policy, which is online for anybody to read. And that is the only section in there that applies to alcohol abuse. But they need something more. They need something more to dissuade these guys from being stupid and potentially losing their jobs. You know, Jeff's got two kids. Enough! I mean, what's the law there in North Carolina? Don't they have those ignition locking devices? I think it's called like an alcohol ignition lock or some such thing where if you get in your car, you have to like blow into this device before you can start the engine. And if your score is too high, if your blood alcohol is too high, the car won't start. The car simply will not start. Yeah, his license was already revoked, and that didn't stop him from getting behind the wheel. Maybe a device like that should be mandatory after a certain number of arrests. You know, next time it may not just save his life, it could save somebody else's life too. You know, I just read a story in the New York Post yesterday about this band Wild Bell. It's like a brother and sister band or you know, duo. They were going to perform at Radio City Music Hall. They just had to cancel their gig at Radio City Music Hall because their father was killed in a car accident by an alleged drunk driver. And I think the drunk driver died as well, which is kind of unique because you read a lot of these stories and they're angering because more often than not, the drunk driver walks away with barely a scratch on them. It's somebody else who loses their life. In this case, a whole bunch of people died, including their dad. Just read about that yesterday. And these kind of stories happen all the time. It's actually quite amazing that whether it's Jeff or other wrestlers, you read about these arrests and them getting behind the wheel and blowing these astronomical numbers into these, you know, breathalyzers, that sort of thing doesn't happen more often. I don't want to read about that sort of thing. I don't want that to happen. It's one thing to be caught passed out in a stairwell like he was over the summer. He's not hurting anybody. He's not hurting anybody but himself. It's very different to be blitzed out of your mind and get behind the wheel of a 2-ton vehicle. That's not going to end well for anybody. WWE Hell in a Cell takes place tonight in Sacramento, California. Until SmackDown on Friday, there were a grand total of 3 matches announced for this show. Between you had Raw's season premiere on Monday, you had NXT on USA, which was a big show this week, SmackDown's big debut on Fox, and the start of the hype for Sweet Saudi Money 4, Please God No More. Between all of those things, this pay-per-view is like the neglected bastard child of Vince McMahon after Hornswoggle, I guess. So now we're up to 4 matches as I record this. We have Bayley defending her SmackDown Women's Championship again against Charlotte Flair. And on Twitter Thursday, Bayley said that she, at that time, still did not have a match for Hell in a Cell, and she was so impressed, even in defeat, by the match that Candice LeRae had with Shayna Baszler on NXT on Wednesday. She asked Candice about wrestling her at Hell in a Cell. And I knew it wasn't going to happen, but I read that and I said, why would you tease a match like that that we know is not going to happen and they're going to end up doing another match that's not going to be as good? So I have to assume that this match will go longer than Bayley and Charlotte's last match. I don't think the outcome will be much different, though. I think Bayley is going to retain her championship. We already know that Charlotte's going to have at least another 10 titles in her career. I don't think tonight's going to be another one of them. I think Bayley, there's still more to do with Bayley. You know, Bayley can still get even darker than she is now. She really hasn't changed all that much. She's been kind of entertaining as sort of the over the top best friend of Sasha Banks, and she'll cheat a little bit here and there. But they can take that to the next level. I think it would be a mistake to get the belt off Bayley right now, so I'm going to pick her to retain. We've got Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan teaming up against Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. I see a lot of people saying, well, Harper and Rowan have to win. They have to win. Well, that's why Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan are going to win. I am picking them to win this match. You know, a few weeks ago, I was still convinced that this was all one big ruse. It was going to be Halloween Havoc 95 all over again, and Bryan was going to turn on Roman. I don't think that's the direction they're going in anymore. And I do think that ultimately we will get Bryan against Roman. I don't know that it's going to be this whole big elaborate plan, just because it's gotten to the point now where it really would not make any sense. And I don't want to start pitching stories that just make no sense. It made sense to me still, even just a few weeks ago. But now it just wouldn't make as much sense to me. And I don't think they need to go down that road. And Bryan, you know, Bryan's been getting those reactions again from the crowd and the yes chants that, you know, he was getting when he was big time over as a babyface. Do you want to give that up and just have him go heel again? You know, is this like Austin in 01? where the old Stone Cold came back for 1 week on TV, and they probably should have kept him babyface, but then they just turned him heel again. So I do think we're going to get Roman and Bryan. There could be a miscommunication in this match that leads to a Harper and Rowan win. If Harper and Rowan do win, I'll say this. If they do pick up the win, and I'm not picking them to win, but if they do, it's going to be some kind of fluky thing like that. They're not just, obviously, they're not just going to beat Bryan and Roman straight up. It's going to be some kind of a falling out or a miscommunication on the babyface's end that leads to their loss. And maybe that could then kickstart a feud. We don't know if Bryan and Roman are even going to stay on the same brand. We have a whole brand split coming up next week. Are they both going to stay on SmackDown? Is one guy going to move to Raw? We don't know. I don't think Roman's going anywhere. But I could see Bryan potentially being drafted back over to Monday Night Raw. But I'm going to pick Reigns and Bryan to win. And then we have our two Hell in a Cell matches. Becky Lynch defends the Raw Women's Championship against The Boss, Sasha Banks. I'm looking forward to this match. I think they're going to have a really good match. I enjoyed their last match. I said that may have been the best match on the last pay-per-view. And now you put a cell around them, and then they maybe can bring some weapons and things into the match. So I'm looking forward to this. This is a tougher one to call, but I'm going to stick with Becky. I don't think they're ready to take that championship off her just yet. Sasha could be drafted to SmackDown. I put that out there as a possibility too, a strong possibility. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger on a title change. So I think Becky is going to pick up the win and retain her championship. This could be the sleeper match on the show. But that then leads us to our main event. The other Hell in a Cell match. This for the Universal Championship. Seth Rollins defends against The Fiend, Bray Wyatt. Really the hottest act to come along here in WWE in many, many years. And what set off alarm bells for me this week was this poll that WWE put up on its Twitter page, asking people, how do you think the match between The Fiend and Seth Rollins is going to end on Sunday at Hell in a Cell? And they listed among the options, pinfall, submission, or disqualification. They actually listed DQ as one of the possible outcomes for a match that is not supposed to end on a disqualification. These guys go into these cages, they maim each other, they use their faces on the cage as cheese graters, they have chairs and tables. This is a no disqualification match. Why would you list DQ as a possible option for a match finish like this? Unless they had a possible DQ finish in mind for this pay-per-view tonight. So they may have some kind of crappy non-finish planned here. As long as they don't beat The Fiend, I guess. I mean, I would not be happy about that at all. But as long as they don't just straight up beat The Fiend, either way, that would be a massive letdown. But then again, if it does end that way, they'd be putting about as much effort and thought into the finish as they have this entire pay-per-view. So it kind of makes sense in a way. I think The Fiend should win. I think he is going to win. I still have faith that they will do the right thing. They put themselves in this situation. If they're having buyer's remorse on doing this match, if they don't want to take the title off Seth Rollins, then they never should have put The Fiend in this match to begin with. It's like the whole Ryback CM Punk thing from Hell in a Cell all those years ago, where Ryback filled in for an injured John Cena. Ryback had been unbeaten, and then he got beat. And then after that, it was just this cascading, like, month after month, it was, you know, defeat after defeat after defeat for Ryback, another guy they had something in, and they squandered. But they really do. They have a lot more here in Bray Wyatt. And to have him lose tonight on this pay-per-view would truly be, I'd have to go back and see, because they've done a lot of stupid things, if it would be the dumbest thing they do all year. But if it isn't the dumbest, it would be one of the top three dumbest things that they do all year, if they have The Fiend lose this match. So I'm picking The Fiend to win. They've got gold in this guy. And I think that in the end, they'll do the right thing. So that's it. That's the entire card as it is arranged right now for Hell in a Cell. I'm sure on paper they have another four or five matches they have not announced. We don't know what they are. We don't know what the kickoff match or matches are going to be. Maybe they'll throw Rusev and Bobby Lashley on the card with Lana on a pole. Who knows? But it's hard to really get excited about a pay-per-view when the company itself doesn't seem all that excited about the pay-per-view. And you can excuse them to an extent by saying, well, they had a lot of big shows this week. This was one of many. And you can't really hold it against them because it's all about Fox and the Fox debut. And that's true. That's true. I understand that. But you have a pay-per-view that you want people to subscribe to your network for. Some people actually do still pay for the pay-per-views. I don't think it's that many. It's like 10,000 people maybe in the entire country. But, you know, still, you've got to announce an actual frickin' card for your show. There's no excuse for that. There's absolutely no excuse for the lack of promotion that they have put into this pay-per-view here tonight. And if they were just going to have four matches and have a two-hour show, I'd be the happiest guy in the world. Great. Like the old In Your Houses. We'll have a two-hour pay-per-view and just focus on the matches that you think are the most important. But it ain't going to be 2 hours. They're going to go 3.5, 4 hours tonight and expect people to care about these other matches. And that's wrong. That's not the way you build a pay-per-view. But I'll be watching. I'll be watching the pay-per-view tonight, however long it is. And when Hell in a Cell is over tonight, I'll be going live on YouTube for a Hell in a Cell live stream, a birthday live stream tonight. So join me. We'll have one big birthday party tonight after Hell in a Cell. And if The Fiend does get beat, then we can commiserate together. So hopefully you'll join me live on YouTube. Week one of the Wednesday Night War is in the books. An excellent NXT show on Wednesday night and a very good first effort from AEW in its debut on TNT. Made for a fun night for people who watch pro wrestling. I thought NXT won the night between the two shows wrestling-wise. There was nothing on either show as good as that Matt Riddle-Adam Cole match. Not even close. You know, Shayna Baszler and Candice LeRae was very good. I thought Cody and Sammy Guevara was very good. Even, you know, Pac and Hangman Page had a good match. None of that could touch the NXT title match with Cole and Riddle. But everybody wanted to know what the ratings were going to look like. Because for all the talk about how ratings don't matter anymore, or, you know, why do you care about the ratings? How does it affect you? I love getting those stupid comments as well. But people will say, you know, ratings don't matter anymore, and there's DVR, and there's social media. You know, there's also a hole in your head with all of the smart stuff leaking out of it. If you think that ratings simply don't matter anymore. You know, WWE makes the majority of its money off of its TV contracts. You do realize this. That is what is keeping this company as strong as it is. Besides the sweet Saudi money. It's the $1 billion from Fox. It's the $1 billion or close to $1 billion they're getting from NBC Universal. This company is secure for at least the next 5, maybe 10 years. If the ratings were to bottom out, and those all-important demos were to crash, you will very quickly realize why the ratings still do matter. The way people obsess over them, I will say, is a relic of the Monday Night War. I'll give you that. You know, people are still stuck in that mindset, or they just think, oh, it's fun to pretend that it's Raw versus Nitro all over again, only with 7 or 8 million fewer people watching. I said to a friend of mine who's like a casual fan, he was asking, what were the ratings for this week? And I told him, I said, you know, the rating for AEW, I told him the rating for NXT, and if you combine them, it's over 2 million or 2.5 million. Yeah, and his comment, because he knew the numbers that Raw and Nitro were doing 20 years ago, and in his mind, he's like, that's it? That ain't great. Now, by today's standards, that may be considered pretty good, but he's got a point. You know, you compare the two, and the way things used to be in terms of the numbers and the casual viewers they were able to hook in to watch their shows, it really is night and day. So everything is relative. If you're going to compare it to that era, there is no comparison. But if you're going to look at it in more of just in the context of today, you know, I don't think it's too bad at all. But there is some of that going on. Yes, people do put too much stock into that stuff. It's almost like they take it too seriously. But for bragging rights, if nothing else, people were waiting with bated breath for these first numbers to come in, or before we even got them. WWE issued a very magnanimous statement to the various wrestling news websites congratulating AEW on a successful premiere. before reminding everybody at the end of their statement that this is a marathon and not a sprint. Now, that is true. I'm not going to argue with that. It is a marathon. It is a case where you have to see what the numbers are in week 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. It's not all about week 1. You know? But I did love WWE sticking that in there at the very end. A little, you know, you won the battle, but you won't win the war kind of thing. I love the idea that they had to point out to us that it's a marathon and not a sprint. This from the company that hotshotted 3 championship matches and 2 big returns on one show. Yeah, but it's not a marathon. Of course not. No, no, no. It's not a marathon. It's a sprint. I need WWE, of all people, to tell me that. You know, I don't even like to bring him up. I rarely mention him on my show anymore. But I did see that Vince Russo could not believe that WWE would put out a statement congratulating the competition. I wonder, bro, if WWE is going to start a trend, bro, of companies putting their rival competition over, bro. Is this what we're headed towards? Like, bro, maybe Coke telling customers to try Pepsi. Vince McMahon, what the hell happened to your bravado, bro? See, that last bro was legit. He actually wrote that out. I added the other bros for effect because I just didn't feel there was enough bro in there to accurately portray this man. Bro, when I worked for TNA and Dixie Carta, bro, we never would have done something like that. Bro, look, I'm going to be honest with you, okay? And when have I ever lied to you, bro? In the TNA days, we would have just as soon slit the competition's throat and let them bleed out, bro. Just bleed out. That is how cutthroat the business was, bro. We would literally cut your throat and you would bleed out like Hawaiian Punch, bro. This would be like the CEO of Hawaiian Punch going to the bar mitzvah of the Kool-Aid man's daughter, bro. It would not happen. It would never, ever happen, bro. Okay, that's enough of that. I haven't done a good Russo impression in a while, so I got it out of my system now. But no, he did make that statement. He was very bothered by this. He was very bothered that WWE would put out a statement congratulating AEW. What a horrible thing for them to do. What a horrible thing for them to do. This is the same person who used to go off on Twitter telling people, turn the other cheek. Why is everybody so mean to me? If only people on social media and in the world could be nicer to each other. Well, here's WWE, and I'm sure they had their fingers crossed behind their back when they made the statement, but still, WWE put this nice statement out. But apparently this is a huge issue to Vince Russo. So it's like it's blasphemy. Anyway, head-to-head, week one belongs to AEW. Numbers-wise, which far surpassed my expectations for what I thought they would do. I thought if they did 500,000, they should be happy, and then they could build on that, and they can grow that number. Then they went and they did 631,000 viewers the night before for a preview show. And I thought to myself, huh, well, I guess 500,000 wouldn't be such a good number after all. You're not going to do 631,000 for a preview show and then see 500,000 for your main show as being a good thing. And then came the overnights. 1.4 million viewers for AEW Dynamite to 891,000 for NXT on USA. The first, by the way, 2-hour NXT on USA. Because when you have that second hour, that can affect the number as well. That could be a small part of why the number was down from where it was before, but that doesn't tell the whole story. Because they were down quite a bit, actually, NXT was. But it was TNT's biggest premiere in 5 years. Even more impressive, in that advertiser-friendly 18 to 49 demo that they all live and die by because of the advertisers, AEW, they doubled what NXT did. But NXT did the exact same number it did the week before, which means these were new fans. So it's not like AEW did this astronomical number in 18 to 49 and they took a huge chunk from that same demo for NXT. The number in that demo for NXT was the same. So these are new fans. These are young, new fans, new viewers that they were able to attract, which is a great thing. You know, AEW, they did about 400,000 viewers for the Dynamite replay. In Canada, live on TSN, the show brought in another 100,000 plus viewers, which I take it is a good number. I mean, especially against hockey. They love their hockey up there in Canada. Hockey and curling. They love their curling. Even though I still have no idea what curling even is, but apparently I remember that. I know curling is a very big deal up in Canada. Maybe they flex their biceps. Is it like a posing contest? I don't know. But that means the two shows combined, the two wrestling shows combined, for over 2 million viewers last Wednesday, which is comparable to what Monday Night Raw would do in a typical week. The alarming thing about NXT is that, and you know, in week three on USA, now again, this was the first two-hour show, but still, week three on USA, 3 weeks in, they've lost nearly a quarter of the audience that they started out with. They started out with 1.1 million, they fell to a million, and now they fell to 891,000. That's for a show as loaded as any weekly show that they have ever produced. That's not a good direction to be going in. Now that being said, I would caution any AEW fans making fun of WWE for this or taking glee in this. The same thing could very well happen to AEW in these next 2 weeks. I don't expect them to maintain this kind of audience. They're not doing 1.4 million every week. And in fact, I expect them to drop this week. The question is, how big is the drop going to be? It's like when a new movie comes out and it's got this really great opening weekend. They exceeded expectations. You know, people were projecting the movie would only do $30 million. And then in its opening weekend, it did $50 million. And there are executives dancing in their office. But what ends up happening is, in week two, in week three, there's this huge drop-off. And the question usually is, all right, there's going to be a drop-off. How big is it going to be? Is it going to be a huge drop? Is it going to be a small drop? And I think the same kind of logic applies here. I think there'll be a drop. The question is, how bad do they fall? Do they fall a little bit? Do they sink like a stone? Does NXT overtake them? It depends on whether or not people like what they saw when they tuned in last Wednesday. So I would pump the brakes before I get too far ahead of myself if you're taking glee in WWE getting rocked the other night. You know, some people look at this like a team sport. I'll get messages, who cares about the ratings? Why do people report on the ratings still? It's not 1997 anymore. Because it's news. Because it's news. Now maybe on a message board forum somewhere, Joe Blow, who's going nuts about the ratings, you could say, dude, why are you going nuts about the ratings? But I do a show, and I report on the news, and the news this week was AEW beat NXT in the ratings. So, of course, I'm going to talk about that. But, you know, the other reason is because I want to. It's fun. It's fun to follow along. There are people, though, who take this stuff way too seriously, and they take it way too personally. It's not a team sport. You can root for both sides to do well. That doesn't make you, I mean, if you're not going to root for the Mets and the Yankees because then you're just a fair-weather fan. Pick a team. That's not what this is. You can root for both sides and hope that they both do well. NXT has 6 years behind it. It has WWE, the WWE machine behind it. AEW is still a baby. It's a new brand. It's less of a sure thing, so people are excited to see it do well right out of the gate. If AEW does well, who knows? Maybe it opens the door for the NWA to get a decent TV deal at some point instead of just airing on YouTube and Facebook. Maybe it opens a lot of eyes at other networks when it comes to pro wrestling, eyes that WWE clearly has not opened in the last several years because of how hard it is still to get wrestling on a big station. That's all the proof you need. You know how many wrestling companies have tried to get a good TV deal? How many of them have gotten a really good TV deal? Not very many. I mean, Impact had to buy its own network. Or Anthem did, technically. Just to get Impact on a decent station, they just said, fuck it, we'll buy them. We'll buy Access TV. So now Impact is on Access, which is a much better place for them to be, but they had to go buy them. And that's the only reason they're on there, because it's not easy. It's not easy to convince TV executives anymore to invest in pro wrestling. WWE did, but they're the biggest brand in the world when it comes to pro wrestling. They convinced Fox to give them $1 billion. Good for them. The NWA's not going to do that. Ring of Honor's not going to do that. Impact's not going to do that. AEW, they were able to convince TNT to give them a shot. That's where Tony Khan's influence, I assume, comes into play. Because it wasn't Cody knocking on doors, and it wasn't Kenny Omega knocking on doors saying, hey, give me a TV deal. If it was so easy to get wrestling on a big TV station, Jeff Jarrett would have gotten his Global Force Gold on a decent station before he finally gave up. So in response to this news, Chris Jericho, who got an on-screen mention during the New York Rangers game the other night, his father used to play for the Rangers. Good exposure, you would think, right, for the AEW champion, except for one small little thing. They identified him on screen as WWE superstar Chris Jericho. Oops. Somewhere Vince McMahon is petting his cat with an evil grin on his face. This is what the AEW champion had to say in response to their big ratings victory. They started this. Everything they've done has been reactionary to us. We're not in a war with anybody other than ourselves. All that matters is our show. They kind of started this war the very first night. They got destroyed. Big deal. It's our first debut, but they have to come back and say, oh, it's a marathon and it's not a one-night sprint. Who's ever said that it was a one-night sprint? It's not a war for us. Now we're placed in one and we're going to kick ass. So that comes from Chris Jericho. The bigger venues, I think, the one thing I will say about watching the two shows flipping around like that was the bigger venues are going to be a very big plus, I think, for AEW. And these first few shows, if they're not sold out, they're close to sold out. So it looks great on TV. You have these buildings that are packed and you got this energetic, lively crowd that's into almost everything that they're seeing. That can't last forever. But these first few weeks, it just gives this show just a great vibe, right? It's a great atmosphere for the show. The fans at Full Sail are still very passionate, you know, at least for the first hour of NXT, but it would be very good for them to get out on the road a couple of times each month and go to bigger venues. They don't have to go to a 15,000 seat building, because I do think that would take away from the luster of those big takeover shows if they just ran big buildings all the time. I'm not saying just ditch Full Sail and go on the road full time, but I think they've got to get out of Full Sail. And I know Meltzer had a note in his newsletter that about an hour or so into the show, he got a text message from somebody in WWE saying, we've got to get out of this building. I hope that doesn't mean we have to get out of this building, period, because I still think Full Sail is a good place to have a wrestling show. But they've got to get on the road and get out to different venues. Maybe like a Hammerstein-type venue, if they have that in other cities. Where it looks different, but it's just this great... It's a small venue for a wrestling show, but you can get 2,000 people in the building instead of 400. That's something they're going to have to do. Because if they just have the shows every week like this in Full Sail, and you flip over and you see AEW in these 10,000, 7,000, 12,000 seat buildings... With people going ape shit, you know, people are going to look at AEW and say, hey, this is the major leagues here. And NXT, it's almost like this Bush League looking show. So I do think that may be a problem for them going forward. Final results of the poll I put up on Twitter for Dynamite. I had over 5,000 votes. To be exact, I had over 5,400 votes, which is just a huge number. And an overwhelming majority of you thought that it was a thumbs-up show, to the tune of 85% thumbs-up, just 15% thumbs-down. Who knew a t-shirt company, right, could put on such a good wrestling show? Who knew? Very quick recap. I'm not going to go through the entire show. You can listen to my full review of Dynamite. It's up on YouTube. The plan is to go live on YouTube every Wednesday night, between 10 and 10:15, after the show goes off the air. I'll be going live again this Wednesday for episode 2. And I will house my full reviews there on the YouTube channel. So you can find it there. And that will be the plan going forward. So effectively, you guys are getting an extra sound off every week going forward. So there you go. JR, Excalibur, and Tony Schiavone, I thought, did a very good job. JR, yeah, I thought this was probably the best that he has sounded since he started with AEW. Tony Schiavone, though, it's almost like he went into the Wayback Machine. you know, that voice and even his energy. He was all over the place on this show. He was in the booth. He was in the ring. He was doing interviews in the aisleway. They have him doing YouTube videos in the control centers. So they're doing a lot more with Shivani than I thought they would, or that I even thought he'd be willing to do. Now, he still has his minor league baseball and football gigs. That really is still his passion. That's my sense. And there's going to be some dates that he misses. You know, he's not going to be at the next pay-per-view, for example, because he's got a football game to call. But I love Tony Schiavone being part of this team. It's not just a nostalgia thing. He's still a really good announcer, and he's got more energy than Jim Ross does. So if they were to swap their roles, for example, if they ever wanted to have Schiavone as the lead play-by-play voice and have JR as almost like the supporting color guy, that could work too. But I do like the idea of Schiavone not just doing commentary, but also going down to the ring, playing the old Mean Gene role on Nitro and doing interviews with people. So I love that. I loved hearing Schiavone, and I think he's a great addition to the show. I thought the best match of the night was Cody and Sammy. Others may say Nyla Rose and Riho. Riho is the first AEW Women's Champion. I didn't think that match was that great, to be honest with you, at least not up until the end. I thought it was actually, I don't want to say bad, but it just was not, it was not as good as I was hoping it would be. The end of the show, we had the debut of Jake Hager, the former Jack Swagger from WWE, and Lucha Underground, too. In fact, I believe he was the last Lucha Underground champion. And so he debuted at the end, and it looks like there's a faction now with him and Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara and Santana and Ortiz. Later on, when the show was over, I saw a backstage interview that they posted on their YouTube channel with Alex Marvez interviewing Sammy Guevara. This was right after Sammy lost to Cody at the beginning of the show. And he got back to the locker room, and Guevara was just infuriated by Marvez's question. And he even said to Marvez, "Why did they hire you?" It was like something like, "Why did they hire you?" or "Why do you still have a job?" And that got a good laugh out of me. And when Marvez asked him then about Jericho attacking Sammy, "Why'd you back off? What was that about?" Sammy just puts his arms up as if to go, "I don't know." And then he walked off. And that was a subtle tease of what was to come later on in the night. I don't know for the life of me why that did not air on TV. You know, that segment and those types of segments should not just be on YouTube. That should have aired on the actual television show because it played into the story at the end of the show. There was a post-show media scrum with Tony Khan. It is refreshing to have this kind of insight from the head honchos. You got Tony Khan in AEW. You've got Triple H in NXT, who does a great job with those pre and post show conference calls that he does with the different wrestling media people. You know, it's a level of openness that never existed before in wrestling. So I like that both of them do this. I think that's a good thing that they do that. He said that Golden Boy will call the action with JR and Excalibur at Full Gear since Schiavone won't be there. He confirmed that what we saw at the end of the show was a new heel faction. So that is a new group. I don't know what they're going to be called. It would probably make sense to play off of the Alpha name in some way, maybe Alpha Club or something like that, but I don't know what they're going to be called. But it will be Jericho, it will be LAX, it will be Sammy Guevara, and it will be Jake Hager. I'm not exactly excited to see Jack Swagger at the end of the show as some kind of huge surprise. But if he's going to be the heavy of the group in a bodyguard type role, the muscle behind Jericho, that would be a good role for him to be in. He was asked about Jericho wrestling Hiroshi Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom in January, which I don't remember that officially being announced until I heard it there, but apparently that's a thing. Apparently Chris Jericho is going to wrestle Hiroshi Tanahashi on January 4th at the Tokyo Dome. And so the question to Tony Khan was, do you envision other stars, New Japan stars, showing up in AEW? And he said, well, you know, I don't know, but it does feel like one good turn deserves another. So basically saying, you know, we have Jericho and Jon Moxley is probably going to be on the Wrestle Kingdom card. Boy, it would sure be nice if we could then work something out where, you know, we get some New Japan stars who show up on Dynamite. That's basically what he was saying. You know, this AEW New Japan stuff, I wish these two would just fuck already and get it over with. Enough with the games. It makes all the sense in the world, given their audiences, for the two of them to work together. I think they will. I just wish they would speed it up. UK. I have a note here just to mention the UK stuff. Talked about the TV deal last week. A lot of outrage. A lot of disappointment over in the UK about the show airing on a four-day delay at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. Well, ITV and Tony Khan, they went back to the drawing board. They were able to work out a better arrangement. The arrangement being that the show will drop every Thursday. So the day after it airs live here in the US and in Canada. It will be in the ITV hub at 7 p.m. the next night, which is a big improvement from a four-day delay at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. It still will air at 8:20 a.m. on Sundays on ITV4, I believe. But it's going to air a lot sooner in the ITV hub, and you know, people seem to be pretty happy about that. I did hear from one person who said that the show, when it showed up in the hub, and you UK fans can chime in and tell me if this is the case or not, that the show was very heavily edited. And so there was some disappointment about the show being edited for content and for time, and there were things missing. That would suck if that's the case, and I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm sure, I know we have UK people listening to this, so let me know if that's the case or not. I don't know if that's going to be the way it is every week. It may be, you know, where the show is sliced and diced. But at least you'll be able to watch it a lot sooner. You can still watch it live if you pay for it through Fight TV. You can still watch the show live, but you'll just have to pay to see it. This Wednesday, it is the Young Bucks against Private Party in the opening round of the tag team tournament. Jon Moxley takes on Shawn Spears. Chris Jericho will team with Sammy Guevara against Dustin Rhodes and Hangman Adam Page. Before that, though, AEW is debuting a new series hosted by Tony Schiavone on their YouTube channel called AEW Dark, which is not what I thought it would be when I first heard that name. Each week, they will be airing the dark matches from the previous week's tapings that did not air on TV, which I think is a pretty cool concept. And so that debuts on YouTube this Tuesday. Those matches would be Darby Allin against Shima. There is a four-way with the Lucha Bros, the Best Friends, Jack Evans and Angelico, and Private Party, and SCU against the Jurassic Express, who I could not believe were not on that first TV show. They were in the dark match that night. And a four-way with Ali, Britt Baker, Bea Priestley, and Penelope Ford. I don't know if all the matches will air on YouTube or just some of them, but I do think it's a cool concept, and it's a great hook to get people to come and sub to their YouTube channel. Now, in the wee hours of the morning on Friday, Randy Orton, fresh off of his Twitter challenge to The Rock, which have fallen on deaf ears so far, for a match at WrestleMania next year, he played some Call of Duty Zombies on Twitch with a kid that apparently he befriended, I guess, on social media many years ago. Apparently he was drinking and he was cussing. He was answering a bunch of questions. He may have also very casually dropped the N-bomb in a very casual way, which would explain why the archived version of the stream was deleted, and so you can't see it anymore. There's only short clips that people have posted up on Twitter. But among the things that he had to say, he did a great AJ Styles impersonation.
This is AJ Styles, phenomenal one, redneck from Atlanta, Georgia. Don't you know, I'm going live on Mixer.
He had high praise for the AEW show. He said that it had a big show feel to it, and he loved the opening match with Cody and Sammy. And he said that he would love to work with Sammy Guevara in the future. And his favorite match was Pac against Hangman Page. He misses having Sheamus in the locker room. He said that his wife would fuck up any woman in WWE because she's from Brooklyn, which is damn right. And he said that he would love to work a match with CM Punk, even if it meant having to go to AEW to do it. You know, they had a good match at WrestleMania 27, from what I can remember. But I don't know how many people are clamoring to see Punk come back to wrestle Randy Orton. He joked that he may need a job if he wakes up in the morning and finds out that he's been fired. It's no wonder he loves AEW so much. He knows that WWE would never be stupid enough to get rid of him. Randy Orton Twitch Gamer is something I never thought I would actually talk about here on the podcast, but here we are. Friday night, was one of the biggest WWE shows of the year. Their big return to broadcast television, their first show on Fox outside, I think, of a WrestleMania 11 special that they aired in 1995. And the, of course, the syndicated shows that used to air on the Fox affiliates, at least here in New York, it was always Fox 5. You had Superstars and Wrestling Challenge. But aside from all that, really, their first show on Fox since Saturday Night's Main Event went off the air the first time in November of 1992. Fox paid WWE $1 billion for SmackDown. They didn't pay them $1 billion for Raw and SmackDown and all their shows. They paid them $1 billion for SmackDown. The second, the quote, second-rate show that WWE has had now for the last 20 years. Hasn't always been second-rate. There have been years where I would argue it was the A-show. But Raw has always been treated as Vince McMahon's baby. Raw has always been the flagship show. I think we have finally reached a point where Raw is no longer going to be the flagship. You look at the way that they promoted this show and the money they're getting and they're being on broadcast television. SmackDown's audience this week easily blew away what Raw normally does. I think we may have finally reached a point where Raw is no longer the flagship show. I mean, Fox wanted Michael Cole and Corey Graves. They look at them as the A-team. They got Michael Cole and Corey Graves. So on Raw, they put Dio Madden, Vic Joseph, who are still getting their feet wet together as commentators. If you think about it, they really are making moves that would position SmackDown now to be the A-show over Raw. But Fox had a billion reasons to do all they could to make this show a success. They pulled in 3.87 million viewers and trounced everything else in that male 18 to 49 demo, which Fox, I'm sure, is happy with. They went all out with the blue carpet, they called it, like a big award show. They had wrestlers and celebrities walking the carpet. They had a whole pre-show on Fox leading up to SmackDown. They had Aaron Andrews backstage interviewing the New Day. They had celebrity cameos. They had legends waving in the crowd. They've been hyping this up for weeks now on their football games. They've been hyping it up on their baseball games. All their Fox Sports studio shows. They're going to have their own studio show starting October 15th. With Renee Young and Booker T and most likely CM Punk. That's not confirmed, but it sounds like that's a done deal. So what's the verdict? On the whole, overall, I enjoyed it. And I love the new stage. I think the new set looks badass. I mean, Raw's set, I think, is pretty nice too. But it's blown away by the new SmackDown stage. It's too bad we didn't get that giant fist back above the entranceway, but I guess you can't go back in time and bring back all the relics. They already had Hogan and Flair in the crowd. That's enough as far as the relics go. But Twitter poll, over 4,400 votes. Last I checked, 60% thumbs up, 40% thumbs down. So not an overwhelming majority, but a pretty solid majority of people gave the show a thumbs up, and they seem to enjoy it. And if you're Fox, you have to have loved this show. They got The Rock. They got a ladder match. They got a WWE Championship match with Brock Lesnar. They had cameos by Cain Velasquez and Tyson Fury. This is exactly the kind of show that Fox paid for. And if you were somebody who watches for great wrestling, you probably didn't like this show. You had a lot of other wrestling shows this week that were far better than SmackDown when it came to in-ring action. Far better. I mean, there's no comparison. If you were somebody who were... Yeah, if you were watching to see a good go-home show, because I'm so excited to see Hell in a Cell, I don't know how many of those people exist, but if you were watching for a good go-home show to the pay-per-view, then you probably absolutely hated this show. And for good reason. You were left very disappointed if you expected them to really build towards this big Hell in a Cell card. But this show was not about that, right? It wasn't about great wrestling. It wasn't about Hell in a Cell. It was never about Hell in a Cell. They wanted to make news. They wanted this to come off like the biggest party and the biggest deal in the world. Everybody was in town. Everybody couldn't take their eyes off SmackDown, all the celebrities. That's what this was about. It was about generating news and getting people's attention. To that end, I think they succeeded. I enjoyed the show overall. It was a hell of a lot more entertaining than SmackDown has been in a very long time. You know, The Rock, because we get to see him so little these days, I thought he was very entertaining. I enjoyed seeing The Rock, aside from that stupid STD joke that they scripted, which I didn't think was funny. I like that they had Becky in there with him. Now, you may think that, you know, it's kind of cringy to see her in there doing some of The Rock's catchphrases and stuff. Whenever they have them, and Rollins has done that before. When they had Rollins with DX on Raw, this is probably Raw Reunion a few months ago, I will never forget that shot of the click in the ring, embracing. And there's Seth Rollins on the outside. He's like the kid who didn't get picked for the dodgeball team, and he's standing there, and then they're like, all right, come on in, come on in. But that is just a great metaphor for how so many people on this current roster, no matter how cool they try to portray them as, when the old guys come back, when the cooler guys come back, it just shows how uncool so many people on this roster are. I will say this, Becky comes off a lot more cool than her fiance does. So I thought it worked. You know, having her in there, trying to give her some of the rub, working with the Rock. It wasn't Seth Rollins in there working with The Rock. It was Becky Lynch in there working with The Rock. So I think that was smart for them to do that. Baron Corbin, you know, some people were upset. Oh, they buried him. They buried him. He's the heel. Baron Corbin is the heel. Being beaten up by The Rock, there's no shame in that. Now, did it make the King of the Ring stuff look weak by having him get beaten up and mocked? Yeah, to an extent, I think it did. But keep this in mind and tell me I'm wrong, because you know I'm not wrong. He looks absolutely ridiculous walking around in that crown and that robe. Now, The Rock called him a broke-ass Burger King on crack. He looked like a loser out there, but he's wearing a fucking crown and a cape. He already looks like a loser. He looks like every day is Halloween. So did it really hurt him that much more? Did he really look that much more ridiculous than he did coming in? Probably not.
Wednesdays on TNT, the revolution continues with All Elite Wrestling Dynamite. TNT's biggest premiere in 5 years is only getting bigger.
We use the word revolution because this is a revolution!
The most disruptive and exciting movement to hit the pro wrestling scene in the last decade. Made for wrestling fans by the wrestlers themselves, AEW flies higher.
Takes to the skies!
It's harder.
Oh my God!
And with their all-inclusive roster of stars, they're breaking all boundaries. This week, it's the opening round of the tag team tournament to crown new AEW tag team champions, with the Young Bucks hoping to shut down Private Party. Plus, Jon Moxley takes on Shawn Spears, and AEW champion Chris Jericho teams with Sammy Guevara to take on Dustin Rhodes and Hangman Adam Page, live from Boston. All Elite Wrestling Dynamite, Wednesdays at 8, 7 Central, on TNT.
So let's run through this. Charlotte and Becky, they beat Sasha and Bayley. Figure eight on Bayley for the win to set up their SmackDown Women's Championship match tonight. Match was fine. It was a carbon copy of what we got from them on Raw a month ago. I enjoyed the Firefly Funhouse, even though they killed off Ramblin' Rabbit again. You know, he's the Kenny from South Park of WWE. No contest between Rollins and Shinsuke Nakamura when The Fiend comes out. Another mandible claw on Rollins. He throws him off the stage, which is all of a 2-foot drop, if that. Hardly a big fall, but they acted like he'd been tossed off the roof of the Empire State Building. And I am concerned that we've now had three straight weeks of The Fiend coming out and doing the same thing, putting Rollins in the mandible claw. You would think that at some point, Rollins is going to have to get retribution. And that's what worries me about this pay-per-view tonight. I can't just see The Fiend putting the claw on and getting the win, which means he may not get the win. And I think that would be a horrific mistake. So I'm a little concerned about that. But that's the only part that bothered me. The angle itself was fine. They continue, so far, to protect The Fiend. Tonight will be the true test of that. I thought for the time they were given, the ladder match with Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens was good. Even though it felt like they were rushing through it, this entire show, really. But I really felt it in this match, that they were just doing spot after spot, like they were just trying to rush it and get all their shit in. And it was not a long match. You would think a ladder match, they'd give it at least 15 minutes. You've got ladder matches that go 20, 22, 23. They gave them about 11 minutes. So if you wanted to cut out all of the phony trying to climb in some of the slower spots, I guess there's an argument you can make where, hey, they cut out all the slow shit and they just went right to the big moves and the big spots, but it just felt very rushed to me. Like maybe they realized they were running low on time. Even Owens, they came back from commercial. He didn't even get an entrance. He was already standing in the ring, but they made sure to give Shane McMahon his entrance. They made sure he got his entrance. But yeah, they did it that way so that Owens could then come run down the aisleway and beat him up. So yeah, that was fine. But Owens picks up the win and brings the legal documents down from the ceiling in the briefcase. And if they are to be believed, that means that Shane McMahon is gone. He is fired. Kevin Owens got on the mic and said, "You're fired." He gave him a stunner. And Shane McMahon now is fired from WWE. Which would be fantastic, but I have learned to not believe what they say when it comes to this stuff. We have a draft coming up this Friday, and it bleeds into next Monday. There's always a chance that Shane McMahon will join the Monday Night Raw roster. My guess is they'll give him a few months away. They'll take him off television for a while. He'll be back. They always come back. But yeah, we just came off a television show a few weeks ago where Shane McMahon fired Kevin Owens. You know how many TV shows he missed? Zero. None. So they have to build up some goodwill, I think, to get people to actually buy into the idea that Shane McMahon is gone and will not be on TV for a while. He needs to be off TV for a long while before they can bring him back. He has been, you know, this heel character now for almost the entire year. And there was a time where I thought there was value in that. I was kind of enjoying it. And then they did The Miz dirty. I still think what they did to him was a shame because The Miz actually was really getting over as a babyface and had momentum and they killed him off. But then they did this stuff with Owens and they just dragged it out forever. So if this really is the end, then I'm happy. But I am skeptical. Braun Strowman won an 8-man tag for his team. It was him and Miz and Heavy Machinery over AJ Styles, Randy Orton, Dolph Ziggler, and Bobby Roode. This match existed for one reason only: to get a Sports Center moment between Braun Strowman and Tyson Fury, the undefeated Tyson Fury, the lineal heavyweight champion of boxing, Tyson Fury. I saw this once before with The Big Show playing the role of Strowman and Floyd Mayweather playing the role of Tyson Fury. And the angle they shot was much better. This was good, but all it did was remind me of that awesome angle they did at No Way Out with Big Show and Mayweather, where Mayweather clocked Big Show in the face and almost broke his nose. If you're going to do the same angle, at least do it better than you did it the first time. Actually, the original plan for that, just to kind of go off on a tangent for a second, the original plan for that was not supposed to be Big Show against Mayweather. The original plan, according to Big Show, was a tag team match for WrestleMania that following year with Rey Mysterio teaming with Batista against Big Show and Mayweather as partners. But you know what they say about the best laid plans. So this will get people talking. In fact, Tyson Fury has already been invited to Raw tomorrow night. They're going to give him an open mic to address what happened and to address Braun Strowman. I'm thinking this is probably, you know, for the show that WWE has told us in the past is as big or bigger than WrestleMania. And that is, of course, Sweet Saudi Money 4. No Dignity, No Doubt. I think we get the setup for that match tomorrow night, and they may do it on Halloween. I think there is a very good chance that we will see this match on that Saudi Arabia show. Yeah, I mean, why waste it on WrestleMania when you can just do it on the show that is as big or bigger than WrestleMania? Duh! Hello! Only the best for the Crown Prince of Death. We got highlights of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man pinning Carmella backstage to win the 24/7 title. Or DJ Marshmallow. Yes, I know who DJ Marshmallow is. I'm not in the bubble that much. He later lost to, and by the way, one of his influences was Deadmau5, who is better than DJ Marshmallow. But he later lost the championship back to Carmella. They told us to go to their YouTube channel to see how it all went down. And I thought about it. I really did. I really did take 7 or 8 seconds out of my day and thought about doing that. because I do a show, right? And I kind of feel obligated to go watch these things so you don't have to. Or if I think they're really good, I'll tell you, hey, go watch this. This is really good. And I got my hand up to go click the mouse, but I just could not be bothered to physically press down on the button. But I'm sure it was all very entertaining. That's my thoughts on the 24/7 stuff. Roman Reigns beat Eric Rowan in a lumberjack match. Luke Harper came down for the assist. Daniel Bryan, who was on commentary, he threw his headset down. He went after Harper. And this was to set up the tag team match that we will have on the pay-per-view tonight. They also advertised Stone Cold Steve Austin. I wanted to mention this. They were advertising him. They were advertising him locally in the building. They may have actually mentioned it on TV in the commercials and the build-up to this show, which is why when I heard The Rock was going to be there, I was on Twitter. I'm like, well, I hope they can find time to do something on camera with The Rock and Austin. How cool would that be? So Stone Cold was supposed to be there, part of the show in some way, and he was nowhere to be found. Now, apparently there was a pre-taped video. He was there, I believe, and there was a pre-taped video of him that aired before the live crowd, I believe before the show went on the air. And when the show ended, people were still waiting. They expected him to come out. And when he did not come out, there were a lot of very angry fans because they expected Stone Cold to make an appearance. And they already rely too heavily on the legends. We know this. But if you advertise something like that, you need to deliver. They need to be called out for this kind of thing. You know, Hogan and Flair, they were there. They briefly showed them in the crowd, and they showed Goldberg very briefly in the crowd. So some of those names, Kurt Angle, Mick Foley, it was the kind of put your hand up and wave kind of thing. They didn't do anything. But Austin was a promoted name for the show. And the fact that he just wasn't there, I think, was horseshit. And people have a right, people who paid to be there expecting him, have a right to be upset about that. And then we get to Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar against Kofi Kingston for the WWE Championship. Brock's first match on SmackDown since March of 2004. We all knew this was inevitable. I decided to pick the underdog in my predictions here, and I went with Kofi to retain his title. Just because it seemed far too obvious that Brock was going to murder this man. And the way they were talking about it on TV and on social media, well, Kofi, it was a nice run, you know, rest in peace, Kofi. It just seemed to me that people were looking past Kofi. They knew this. And so maybe they had some kind of a finish plan where there's a non-finish or somebody comes out and screws Brock, Kofi retains. It would be a cheap way for him to win, but Brock then moves on to whatever his next big feud is going to be. So I picked Kofi to win this match. I thought maybe there was a big swerve plan for the end of the show. And there was. They did. They did give us a big swerve. They gave it to us after the match. The match itself lasted 7 seconds. The bell rang. Kofi came charging right in with this giant leap, this giant crossbody, whatever it was that he was trying for. He landed right on Brock's shoulders. And one F5 later, the fairy tale title reign of Kofi Kingston came to a screeching halt. The look on Mark Henry's face in the crowd was priceless. Goldberg was standing next to Mark Henry. He looked amused, like he had taught Brock Lesnar well after Goldberg beat Lesnar very quickly in their Survivor Series match, although it went longer than 7 seconds. I was stunned. Not that Brock won. I was just stunned how quickly and how sudden it was. I was stunned that they did Kofi dirty the way they did. Again, I'm not saying him losing was some kind of big mistake or that shocked me, because we knew that was going to happen either here or Hell in a Cell if they rematched the two of them. We knew that his reign was likely coming to an end very soon. But the way they did it, Kofi did not get one move of offense in. Now, maybe the story is going to be that Kofi was overconfident coming into the match. To me, there isn't much of a story left to tell. This marked the end of Kofi Kingston as WWE champion. And I said on this podcast months ago that when that day came that Kofi Kingston lost the championship, he would not be getting that title back, that that would be the end for him as a world champion in WWE. And I believe that to be the case. I don't believe there's going to be a rematch. If there's a rematch, he'll be beaten again. But I don't even think there'll be a rematch. There's no need for a rematch. They already made it clear There's no automatic rematches anymore. So there's not going to be a rematch. There will be no second, third, or fourth title reign for Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston as WWE champion was never supposed to happen. He caught a lucky break when Ali got hurt and the fans got behind him. They needed a championship match for WrestleMania and they lucked their way into this great story. Kofi will always have that WrestleMania moment. I was there for it live. It was an emotional thing. It really was. It was the best moment of WrestleMania this year. When I think back, even more so than Becky winning the championship in the main event, which I thought fell flat, when people look back at this WrestleMania, I know WWE is going to be built around women in the main event for the first time and Becky, you know, pinning Ronda and winning the championship. But to me, the moment that will define WrestleMania 35 will be Kofi Kingston beating Daniel Bryan to become the WWE champion. And nobody can ever take that away from him in the Kofi Mania stuff. Once they paid that story off, I never expected this guy to get 6 months with that championship, but he did. And not only did he get 6 months with the championship, they protected him a lot more than they have protected other people who have held that championship. He lost very few matches in tag or singles. He lost very few matches at all in the last 6 months. He beat Daniel Bryan twice. He beat Kevin Owens. He beat Dolph Ziggler. Well, I mean, it's Dolph Ziggler. That's not a hard mountain to climb. But nevertheless, he beat Dolph Ziggler. He beat Sami Zayn. He beat Samoa Joe. He beat Randy Orton. He beat AJ Styles on SmackDown once in a champion versus champion match on TV. Nobody can look back at this Kofi Kingston run and whine and complain that they did not do all they could to make this guy look strong. Incredible as a champion. The pancake throwing didn't help. I get that it's part of his gimmick, but, you know, the pancake shit does not scream world champion. I agree with that 100%. It would be like Santino with his stupid Cobra, putting the championship on him. And there was a time where I thought Santino should win the championship just because in that Elimination Chamber match, it came down that year to him and Brian. A very similar situation. I think it might have been Randy Orton who was hurt, and Santino was this replacement. And the people badly wanted to see him take that championship from Bryan, and Bryan ended up tapping him out in the end. But it, you know, if Santino had won the championship, it would have been a huge moment, and the people would have popped for it, but then I would have expected him to drop that shit 24 hours later. I would not have expected, nor would I have pitched, for him to be the champion for the next 6 months. So I can understand people saying I can never get into Kofi because of the pancake stuff. The pancake stuff was very stupid. But they protected him way more than I ever thought they would. But he was never supposed to be WWE champion. The powers that be never would have put that title on him were it not for this just perfect alignment of the stars. So when he lost it, I said that, you know, he would not get it back. And I don't think he will. Now, if people want Kofi Kingston as WWE champion that badly, there is one way that you can go about doing that. And this will be very interesting. I'm very curious to see if this happens now. There's a lot of people online who are acting as if they're just beside themselves. They're very angry and very upset that Kofi was just unfair. The way he lost the championship was just completely unfair and disrespectful. That's what they would say to his character. Well, if you're that big of a Kofi Kingston fan, and you believe that strongly that this guy was wronged in some way, and that he should still be WWE champion, or he should be able to do a redemption story and let him climb the mountain again and get back to the championship. There's only one way to do that. People are going to have to get behind Kofi Kingston the way they got behind Daniel Bryan in 2012 and 2013 and 2014. Really, it was 2013 into 2014. There was a movement for Bryan, the likes of which I have not seen in all my years of being a wrestling fan. Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of people who were bigger stars than Bryan. You know, and I would never compare, you know, like Austin and Hogan and people like that. But I mean, having a guy on the roster who they're not doing shit with, but all of a sudden the people just, they like him so much that they won't shut up about him. And they'll chant yes, and they'll chant his name. And it's just this groundswell of support for this one guy, and it builds to him eventually winning the championship. I've never seen that before, the way that I saw that with Daniel Bryan. If you people want Kofi Kingston to be WWE champion again, and if you think he was wronged, then the way to get him back there is to do for him what you did for Daniel Bryan. It's very simple. Make your voices heard. When you pay a ticket to go to the arenas, chant Kofi's name. Go on social media, talk about Kofi, start a hashtag. All the stuff you did for Daniel Bryan, do it for Kofi Kingston. If you feel that strongly that he should be the champion and he should not be reduced to a mid-card role, he should be kept in main events and all that kind of stuff, that's the only way that I can envision this happening. The only way I ever see Kofi Kingston being the champion again is if the fans can get behind him the way they got behind Daniel Bryan. And anything short of that, it will not happen. Kofi is done as a world champion unless the fans get behind him the way they got behind Bryan. Now, I don't think he deserved to get jobbed out the way that he did. Put up a fight. Hit a Trouble in Paradise after the bell. Stun the Beast. Give people a little bit of false hope that he actually stood a chance. Even Dolph Ziggler. Dolph freaking Ziggler got two super kicks in on Goldberg before he got destroyed. But it was one and done. Thanks for coming. And in doing the finish that way, it makes everybody else that Kofi spent the last 6 months wrestling look less than. It makes them all look like fools. Everyone who put Kofi over to make him look credible, from Bryan to Owens to Orton and everybody else in between, they took a giant dump on all of those guys. Not just Kofi, all of them too. Kofi looked so sad in the interview that they posted backstage with Kathy Kelly on the YouTube channel for WWE. He said that the line of the interview, he said that he was going to have to go back and study the tape of what happened. There ain't much tape to study there, my friend. It's going to be a very short session analyzing those tapes. I love that people even use tapes anymore. Wouldn't it be like DVDs or something? He's sitting there with his VCR going over his 7 seconds of match. But they took the title off Kofi and they put it back on Brock Lesnar, who I doubt is going to be making very many more appearances than he already does. But I suppose if Fox wants him and if they pay him, then we will see Brock Lesnar more often on television if Fox wants to pay him to show up. But Rey Mysterio's music hits, out he comes with who I thought initially was his son. I was about to lose my shit over them bringing his son back so quickly after that beatdown that he got on Monday. But then I looked and I'm like, that's not Dominic. It's Cain Velasquez, former UFC heavyweight champion who only recently wrestled his very first professional wrestling match for AAA. And he looked good, but it was his first match. You know, and he's not a spring chicken anymore either. In fact, when he walked out there, you may have noticed, he had a knee brace on. Because he needs knee surgery. But apparently that didn't stop them. Not only does he have a knee injury that I believe he needs surgery for, although he may not have to have it right away. There were reports this week, and I don't know if this is still the case or not. I would be stunned if this was true. Because you could talk about WWE booking and how questionable it is, but when it comes to business stuff like this, if they did this, I would be stunned. That Cain Velasquez, and I think Cain himself may have said this to a news outlet, maybe to ESPN, that he is not signed to a WWE contract. And I know Meltzer said that Tony Khan and AEW were still pursuing him, even as of a couple days ago. If WWE put Cain Velasquez on television, on one of their biggest shows of the year, and they had Cain basically make Brock Lesnar look like a bitch, made their WWE champion look like a bitch, and he is not signed to a contract, the level of stupidity is just too much for words. And it just seems so unlike anything WWE would ever do that I almost don't believe it. But I think Kane himself has said that he's not actually signed to a contract right now. So, theoretically, if Tony Khan were to flash enough money in his face, he could show up on Dynamite this Wednesday. Can you imagine if he showed up on the AEW show on Wednesday after punking out Brock Lesnar on Friday? I'm giving this guy as much money as he wants if I'm Tony Khan. I would like to think that Cain Velasquez is not that stupid to burn that bridge and that he's a professional. But you never know. It's a cutthroat business, bro. A lot of shit happens. So I was stunned to read that. And if he's not signed to a contract, then it's just incredibly stupid to put him out here like this at the end of the show. But out he comes, and he is the man who destroyed Brock Lesnar 9 years ago this month. He is the man who gave Brock Lesnar that long scar that you see on Brock's face. He got that from Cain Velasquez. Lesnar had this look like he had seen a ghost. Cain took his shirt off, he got in the ring, he took down Lesnar, did a little ground and pound. Lesnar rolled out of the ring. Then they stared at each other for what felt like 5 years before they finally went off the air. So it's not a case where the Kofi match had to go so short because they were running low on time. I thought maybe they were running low on time, but only because I was catching up on my DVR. I had no idea that they still had something like 7 or 8 minutes left. So Brock teased he's going to come back down to the ring. Then he wasn't. They showed 3 replays. They're just trying to kill time to get off the air. So it was a very awkward ending there. But all I could do when Kofi got pinned was just let out a laugh. A lot of people said that was my first instinct. I just instinctively could not do anything but laugh when I saw that finish. They buried Kofi on that finish without question. But he had a good run. He had a much better run than I ever expected they would give to him. And now that run is over. I don't see any more in his future. But I am reminded of the fact that they did not treat Kevin Owens much better when he lost the Universal Championship to Goldberg. I don't hear too many people talking about that. Now, it wasn't 7 seconds, but it wasn't much longer than that where Goldberg just beat him in a pay-per-view match. It maybe went about a minute or so. And WWE made Kofi, or tried to make Kofi, feel like a real champion a lot more than they did to KO during his run as the Universal Champion. So it looks like this sets up Lesnar and Velasquez, and the belief is that it may be the match for Sweet Saudi Money 4. You're all just a bunch of whores. WWE, that is. They are putting far more effort into promoting and building this Saudi show than they did their pay-per-view tonight. On the whole, though, I was entertained by SmackDown. You can throw it all out after next week. Because we have the draft. It starts this Friday, and it wraps up the following Monday night on Raw. Lesnar to SmackDown, I mean, it seems all but inevitable now, unless they want to swap the titles and put the Universal title on SmackDown, but then they'd have to change the colors, so that doesn't make a lot of sense. So it seems like Brock is going to be a SmackDown guy, along with Heyman. So you'll have Heyman as the executive director of Raw behind the scenes, and he'll be an on-screen character on SmackDown. So I think Lesnar to SmackDown seems inevitable, and I'll talk about this a little bit more when I get to NXT, but I think Matt Riddle, I'm going to just throw this out there, I think Matt Riddle goes from NXT to either Raw or SmackDown after this loss to Adam Cole last Wednesday, because they're on such a big kick with these MMA guys. I would prefer that he goes to SmackDown so that we can get Lesnar and Matt Riddle, maybe even as early as WrestleMania next year. I know it's probably going to be Lesnar and Roman Reigns. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You forgot about that, didn't you? Roman Reigns is on SmackDown. If he doesn't get drafted, that means that he's on the same brand again with Brock Lesnar. And you know that they're going to want to build to another championship match between Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. Would you rather see that? Or would you rather see Lesnar and Riddle? Raw from Monday night. I have a Sound Off Extra review for Raw up on the YouTube channel if you want my full thoughts on that show. That was really just meant to be a one-week thing. I might do that again this week if I'm around. I'm not sure. It's not going to be a regular thing where I do the Raw review every Monday night. I've got work the next morning, and just the way it works out time-wise, I just don't think I can do it. But if you missed it, you can go back. Full review is up there. The Twitter poll, over 3,500 votes, 45% thumbs up, 55% thumbs down. I said earlier, the new set, I think it looks nice. Not as nice as SmackDown, but it's fine. Vic Joseph, Dio Madden, and Jerry Lawler. Lawler on his podcast, and I thought that they had a good first night. Lawler was Lawler. Lawler did the majority of the talking. Dio Madden was actually very quiet. And I think it's just a case of him having to get comfortable. Over time, we'll hear more of him, but we heard very little of him on the show. Vic Joseph, I thought, did fine. Lawler on his podcast, once again, because he has said this before, many times in the past. But it was amazing to hear him say it this week of all weeks. Said that he is not crazy about being a commentator. He gets no joy out of it. He said it's no fun. It's too much pressure. Which is a lovely thing for him to say the same week that he made his return to the announce booth. We also have an answer as to the future of Tom Phillips. He started his new gig as the lead announcer with Nigel McGuinness on NXT UK. So they outsourced him to another country. They shipped him overseas. Still nothing new, though, on what the future may hold for Byron Saxton. I love the Brock Lesnar angle at the beginning of the show. It was designed, as it turned out, to build to the Cain Velasquez appearance on Friday. But I loved that stuff they did with him and Dominic at the beginning of the show. The Miz TV segment with Hogan and Flair, which gained over 500,000 viewers in the ratings, the biggest of any segment on the entire show by far, was the audience gain for Hogan and Flair. They set up a 5-on-5. And by the way, that's pretty sad. Not for nothing. I mean, it'd be one thing if, all right, they're legends and people want to see them. But, all right, maybe some other guys on the main roster were also seeing gains like that. But nope, Hogan and Flair just blew everybody else away here in 2019. But they set up a 5-on-5 Team Hogan versus Team Flair match in Saudi Arabia 1 month before the Survivor Series. Seth Rollins will captain Team Hogan. Randy Orton, if he can pull himself away long enough from Black Ops 4, he will captain Team Flair. Hogan was on Colin Cowherd's radio show this week and revealed that he will soon be undergoing his 10th back surgery. That's a long flight for someone who's had that many back surgeries. Will he even be able to throw a punch at Flair on the outside? I don't know if he's having the surgery before Saudi Arabia. I don't know if he's having it after the Saudi Arabia show. Is he going to be able to throw a punch? Can Flair's heart even take the stress of taking a punch? We'll find out at Sweet Saudi Money 4. Let the bodies hit the floor. The end of the show, they did this ridiculous angle where Rusev is in the ring during his championship match against Seth Rollins. And out comes Bobby Lashley. Ahead of schedule, from what I thought would be his return date in November. He had the elbow injury, but there he was. Out comes Bobby Lashley, and he waves out Lana, who, of course, is Rusev's wife. And I did see the reactions later on. I saw the video of Baron Corbin and Randy Orton, and they were kind of funny. They were standing off to the side. Apparently, because Corbin, who was supposed to be sitting on his throne, and during the commercial break, the throne broke under his weight. It's too bad that didn't make TV. That'll make a blooper reel on one of their DVDs one day. So they're standing there and they're laughing at all this. I wish they would have shown their reactions on screen. I might have actually enjoyed this segment. But it was just this very long, drawn-out, awkward thing of Rusev standing in the ring and not doing anything and watching his wife swapping spit with Bobby Lashley and wrapping her body around Bobby Lashley as Rusev stood there and stared like he was comatose. This angle was stupid. It gets Rusev in a feud on TV, I will say that, and that's long overdue. We have not seen Rusev doing any, he's been off television really for a number of months. So yeah, sure, it gets him on TV. But I love how people are saying that, like, that they're not even commenting on, like, whether they like the angle. They're like, well, it gets him on TV, as though that justifies something like, or whatever ridiculous angle it may be. Like, okay, I can appreciate that, but I have no interest. Like, if the idea was, it's this great cliffhanger. Cliffhangers are an inherently good thing. We've seen some of them with the Roman Reigns stuff on SmackDown. I've said that before. It's a good idea to have a cliffhanger. That does not mean that every cliffhanger is a good cliffhanger, or it makes for great television. Now, maybe I'll be proven wrong this week, and maybe Raw will just do sky-high numbers, and that segment is going to blow everything else away on the show. Maybe they'll have the 500,000 viewer gain that Hogan and Flair got this week. Maybe it'll go to Lana and Bobby Lashley. And if that's the case, then I'll admit that I was wrong, and hey, it's a great angle, and everybody can enjoy it. I thought this was stupid. I thought this sucked. And I have no interest. I don't even care what the follow-up is. I don't care. What's that song? Who sings that song? What's the band that sings that song? Icona Pop or something. I don't care. I pushed someone down the stairs, and they died. I don't care. Yeah, that. I don't care. I pushed this angle down the stairs. I don't care. Here, somebody set music to that. I don't care. NXT on USA this past Wednesday, the other half of the Wednesday Night War. They didn't waste any time. They went right into the NXT Championship match between Adam Cole and Matt Riddle. Easily, one of the best NXT TV matches in history. I hesitate to say the best because there have been a lot of great TV matches from NXT over the years. And this doesn't include takeovers. Although they easily could have had that as a takeover main event. That's how good this match was. But on the TV show, there have not been too many matches, I don't think, better than this one. Cole wrestled with a cast on his wrist for a wrist fracture that he suffered, legit, at a live event about a month and a half ago. It's a real injury that they worked into the storyline of Riddle hurting him the week before when he put him in the armbar. He wrestled a match like this, with a wrist fracture. Now granted, I don't know how far along in the healing process he is. He could be almost completely healed for all I know. But he wrestled a match like this with a cast on for a wrist fracture. Don't ever let anybody tell you that Adam Cole is not a fucking great professional wrestler. And if they question you, show them this match. That sequence where they were trading strikes, Cole with a super kick, Riddle with a hard, hard knee to the face. Enziguri by Cole, and Riddle with that released German suplex, where he folded this guy up like a pile of laundry. And then Cole hit the Ushiguroshi to Riddle for a near fall. That whole sequence took this match to another level. That released German was just brutal. It looked dangerous, but that was just, it was fantastic to look at. I wouldn't want to take a move like that. But he hit the floating bro, did Riddle for a two count, and Riddle countered the last shot attempt by Cole into an armbar. Cole was able to get out of that. Riddle got the armbar on again. Cole escaped. And another armbar attempt by Matt Riddle until Cole hit him with the cast. It's like Cowboy Bob Orton over here. Hit him with the cast, hit the last shot for the finish, and Adam Cole pins Matt Riddle to retain the NXT Championship. I said it earlier, and I'll say it again here. I think with the loss, I kind of look at this and I say to myself, where is there to go? What's left here in NXT for Matt Riddle? I think he gets drafted. I think he gets drafted to Raw or SmackDown, more likely SmackDown. I think that would be the better place for him to go if the rosters sort of settle where I think they're going to settle. We'll see. We'll see if they have any NXT talent swapping in this draft. The limited commercial interruption stuff at the beginning of the show was nice, but that second hour felt like it dragged a lot because they had to make up for it in the end with all the ad breaks. So it's not like, all right, we're going to have limited commercial interruptions this week, and we're just not going to have the ad breaks that we normally would have. No, they had limited commercial interruption up front, and it's almost like they backloaded the show with a lot of commercials. Finn Balor, when the match was over, you know, that was the big return. Well, there were two big returns on the show, but the most shocking one was Finn Balor coming out. Former NXT champion Finn Balor, we have not seen him in a couple of months since he lost to The Fiend at SummerSlam. And there's been talk about, well, he'll come back and maybe it'll be the Demon against The Fiend. Hell, he might even cost Bray the Hell in a Cell match against Seth Rollins tonight. But no, he showed up here at Full Sail as Finn Balor. He got a tremendous reaction. I mean, he was welcomed back like a rock star. And he was very clear on the microphone that he is not just back for like a one-time match or anything like that. He's back full-time for now, for at least a few months. He is back full-time on the NXT roster. I have no problem with this whatsoever. We knew that something like this was probably going to happen. I thought it might be Kevin Owens with that whole storyline, but it turned out to be Finn Balor. And I think it's smart because it's very important to them. They want the show to succeed. They don't want to be shown up by AEW every single week. And what's one other tool in the toolbox for them to use to try to make sure that NXT's audience stays up? You bring in people from the main roster. Now, I don't want them to flood NXT with main roster people. But Balor wasn't doing anything on television. He's one of the most beloved faces to ever come out of Full Sail. There's absolutely nothing wrong with putting Finn Balor back in NXT, if even for 6 months, even if they wanted him to stick around for a while. They have enough other names on the main roster where they don't need Balor at the moment. They make you know, shift more people from NXT over to Raw and SmackDown like a Matt Riddle. So I have no problem at all. I think it's actually a very smart move to put Balor in NXT. But between the awesome opening match and the Balor return, they peaked with the first 20 minutes or so of the show. Io Shirai beat Mia Yim with the moonsault off the top. This may have been the best Mia Yim match that I have seen since she came to NXT. This was actually a very good match. I would say the same thing about the match with Johnny Gargano and Shane Thorne. This was the best Shane Thorne match I've ever seen. And he doesn't have a whole lot of singles matches to his resume because he came in as a tag team guy, you know, with TM61. But in there with Gargano, no surprise, he had the best singles match of his career so far in NXT. Shayna Baszler and Candice LeRae for the NXT Women's Championship. I would say this was the third best match on the entire show behind the NXT title match and the NXT tag team title match. I really enjoyed this match. Very good stuff. A little surprised that Shayna, not even just that she won, but she just tapped out Candice in the choke, just straight up. So maybe they really are going to build to a story where Dakota Kai eventually takes that championship from Shayna Baszler. Maybe the underdog in this story is not Candice, but the underdog is going to be Dakota Kai, because there is a history there. Before Dakota got hurt, she was being bullied. She was terrified. She was acting terrified whenever she was around Shayna Baszler on TV. So maybe that's the direction they're going to go in. If it's not Candice, and let's say it's not going to be Rhea Ripley, I mean, there's been rumors that Toni Storm maybe will be shifted over from NXT UK to NXT. She just dropped the NXT UK Women's Championship. It's Kylie Rae, I believe. So, yeah, it would not be far-fetched at all to think that Toni Storm is going to come to Full Sail. And Toni Storm would be a hell of a person to slot in there against Shayna Baszler. So they have some options now. They have some options. Pete Dunne and Danny Burch, just, you know, a hard-hitting match here between these two guys. Dunne gets the win. Dunne is now moved full-time to the U.S., so we're going to see more of him on TV, which can only be a good thing. And the main event was the Street Profits, challenging the Undisputed Era, trying to win back their NXT Tag Team Championships, and they had a very good match. This was a very good match. They fell short in the end. I didn't expect them to take the gold away yet from Undisputed Era. They're gonna milk this for a little while longer. So in the end, with the high-low, they get the win. They retain their titles. And as they're about to go off the air, you know, Adam Cole comes out. He's in the aisleway, and he's clapping, and he's cheering on his boys who just got a big win. When all of a sudden, out comes Tommaso Ciampa. We have not seen Tommaso Ciampa since, what, March? Right? He didn't quite make it to take over New York for the match against Johnny Gargano. So it's been many, many months on the shelf after neck surgery for Tommaso Ciampa. And I question whether we will ever see Tommaso Ciampa on the main roster. Well, I guess NXT would technically be main roster now. I question whether we will ever see Tommaso Ciampa on Raw or SmackDown again. Because A, he's made it very clear he doesn't want to go to Raw or SmackDown. He bleeds NXT. He does not want to leave. But physically, he's really beat up. I mean, he's had a lot of injuries. I don't want to say he's being held together by pins and needles. I haven't seen his medical reports, but there's been a lot of injuries over the years. And now he just had neck surgery, which is always a very serious thing. You know, would they trust that he'd be able to hold up on a schedule with Raw or SmackDown? I don't think it's a done deal that we will see him on those shows one day. I hope we do. I hope he gets to go make as much money as he can, and he can have a big sweet Saudi match one day, since, remember, that's as big or bigger than WrestleMania. But I wonder if it will ever happen. So here comes Mr. NXT. Place goes nuts. He circles Adam Cole. He's staring at him. He's staring at his championship. And I love this, because now Adam Cole goes from beating Matt Riddle to having not one but two strong potential opponents in Finn Balor and Tommaso Ciampa. It kind of reminds me of when Kevin Owens was in NXT and he was feuding with like three or four. He had rivalries going with like four different people or five different people at once, including John Cena on the main roster. And I like that. I like it when your big heel is rubbing everybody the wrong way and has three or four different people instead of just one looking to beat the shit out of him. Now this Wednesday, Drew Gulak is going to defend his what is now officially rebranded as the NXT Cruiserweight Championship against Lio Rush. That is, I'm really looking forward to that match. That's going to be a great match. And Walter, speaking of great matches, will be in Full Sail going one-on-one against Kushida. So we have another week coming up where you look at the matches on these cards for NXT and for AEW, and they've got some pretty strong shows coming up. Young Bucks and Private Party is going to be a great match. I just saw it over the summer, and if it's anything like that, it's going to be a great match. So we got a lot of great wrestling coming up this week. It's a good time to be a fan. It's time for this week's RSPW Rewind. 23 years ago, last month, WWE debuted a brand new television show on the USA Network called Livewire. Now, originally the show aired live in studio on Saturday mornings. It was very interactive. They took phone calls and emails and faxes. Yes, faxes. So they were very interactive. Todd Pettengill was the host. Doc Hendricks, a.k.a. Michael PSAs, was also host or co-host sometimes. Jim Cornette would sometimes co-host, and Sonny was there. Vince Russo was there under his Vic Venom moniker sometimes. Yes, Russo and Cornette standing within 5 feet of each other without Cornette killing him. The good old days. I have a lot of fond memories of that show. I used to wake up and watch. I tried to call in. I could never get through. But one of the famous moments, maybe the most famous moment from Livewire, was the time that Paul Heyman called in as Bruce from Connecticut. Or the time that Jim Ross was taking phone calls, which I encourage everybody who's listening to this, when you're done listening to this, to go look up on YouTube. It is under the title, Jim Ross Has a Bad Day. JR's reaction to that first caller about 9 seconds in made me laugh so hard I almost pulled a muscle. And then that little head turn midway through as he's looking, staring dead in the camera. JR was not having a very good day. That's me during some of my live streams when I take calls, so I sympathize with him. At the time, RSPW had a few things to say about this new Livewire show, so I thought that I would gather up a few thoughts, gather up a few posts, and share them with you here. We begin with Jack from September 28th, 1996. I just watched the new WWF Livewire, and it has to be the worst wrestling show ever. The only good thing was Michael P.S. Hayes, who was borderline kayfabe all show, and even that did not help it in not being a bad show. The highlight of the show was when a caller asked Todd Petting himself, WWF was afraid of Hulk Hogan and the New World Order. Todd and Jim Cornette did not know what to say. That was very funny. When the caller asked that, Todd was visibly upset. He hung up on the kid, but tried to soften the blow by saying that they will talk about anything. Yeah, right. Everyone knows that those calls are screened, and if you're not a mark, they will not let you through. For those of you trying to keep count, WCW and ECW were mentioned 3 times each. That was the most shocking part of the entire show. McMahon is trying to change his ways. John Petrie responds, how can it be the worst when it's a step up from Mania? Actually, they all broke kayfabe in small ways. They mentioned WCW several times. They commented on Jim Ross bringing in Austin and Mark Mero from WCW. They answered an ECW question. They mentioned Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and Hulk Hogan. They even clearly showed a screenshot of a fan saying, Freebirds forever. For anyone who missed it, the lucky ones, the show is supposed to have calls, faxes, and emails in a chat room where marks can ask questions to Todd, Jim Cornette, and Michael Hayes. They only answered about 10 calls and a couple of chat questions. Hayes did not know the difference between a fax and an email. The first one he did, he called it an email. Then he accidentally called one a fax, and Cornette and Pettengill jumped on him. From then on, he kept getting frustrated every time they would cut to him. Let me break in here for a second. Michael Hayes not knowing the difference between a fax and an email is peak 1996. I wonder if he would even know the difference here in 2019. The way he dresses, I don't even know if he knows that it's the year 2019. Anyway, John continues, it was what WWF Mania used to be and Blastoff is now, a Raw recap. They did, however, manage to significantly further the Jim Ross angle. They discussed his temporary suspension. They talked to Gorilla Monsoon about what to call the fake Razor and fake Diesel, and even spoke to JR briefly I think this week's installment was much better than last week's. It did just what Mania used to do, in that it recaps Raw. This does go a bit further, however. Hendricks and Cornette were funny at times. Hell, I thought it was fairly entertaining compared to a time slot that I usually skip in the past. It's definitely a show to be watched following a live Raw. So John seemed to like the show a lot. He thought it was something different, and he had some complimentary things to say about Livewire. Then we come to Don Del Grande, who says, "The highlight for people who had the foresight to tape the show was that fax in capital letters was shown for about half a second, where the only word on the fax that I noticed was bastards." Tracy King responded and said, "Actually, I taped the show and paused it when they showed the fax. The fax said, 'Screw you, Jim Ross, you are a crazy bastard.'" See, back then, instead of angry tweets, we had angry faxes. They just took a little bit longer to come through. This post is from Kintaro, from September 29th, 1996, titled, "Next Week's Livewire. Everybody on RSPW, we can do some damage next week by just laying it deep to McMahon on Livewire. I honestly like the concept. I don't see why you guys hate it so much." Mark Davenport responds, "Some folks know crap when they see it, and this show is crap. You might as well have said, 'Because this is a WWF show, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt.' Obviously, if the tables were turned, not many people would give it a chance, seeing the huge bias towards WWF here in RSPW. Ryan Grant says, "I saw a WCW Pro the other day. It featured the Leprechaun and some real sloppy work by the Nasties. I now consider Pro to be crap. I saw WCW Saturday Night with a barely palatable match by Lex Luger. I now declare every episode of Saturday Nitro to be crap, now and forever. I saw an episode of Nitro that consisted of a bunch of guys in black kicking the shit out of Lex Luger and Randy Savage. There were a total of maybe three matches. I declare Nitro to be crap. The exception does not prove the rule. Think about it." I'm not sure what he was trying to say there. I just thought it was funny. He was obviously trying to make some kind of a larger point. Went over my head, whatever it was. October 1st, 1996. Vince McMahon was the next scheduled guest on Livewire, and George Paul had a request for RSPW in his thread titled, "If You Wanna Cuss Vince." It says, "Don't waste any more space flaming him for the ripoffs," that being Fake Diesel and Razor. "Bust his ass on Livewire. What an incredible load of shit this program is. I wouldn't call it if it were real. Even Todd, the face announcer, hangs up on everybody. This is the pits. Make it stop." Rass responds, "I say a lot of us clogged the lines on Saturday to ask McMahon some real questions. The show already sucks, and if McManican doesn't break kayfabe, it will suck even more. I've come up with a list of questions for McNugget, and I plead for all RSPW smarts to call in. Remember, however, there are screeners, so you have to come up with a markish question." Here is Rass's list, his proposed list of questions to ask Vince McMahon. Question A, what's your opinion of Paul Heyman? Question B, can you explain to us the agreement with ECW? Question C, are you trying to rip off the NWO angle? Question D, why do you wear such ugly suits? Why did J.J. Dillon quit? Why do you blame WCW for your rating slump if the WWF sucks? Are you afraid that the NWO will take over the WWF? Why do you job Vader at every house show? What's your opinion of Sabu? Such a random question. What's your opinion of Ric Flair? And finally, why do you insist on creating such stupid gimmicks like transvestites and plumbers? I can't imagine why they had call screeners back then with questions like that. October 5th, 1996, day before my birthday, a post by Chris Hugh titled RSPW's new favorite TV show, WWF Livewire. Let's see, Paul E. Dangerously calling in and telling Vince to shut the fuck up. Vic Venom telling the world that Doc Hendricks was Michael P.S. Hayes and that the Freebirds ruled. Sonny was there. Enough said. Vince's thoughts about Ted Turner, WCW being mentioned freely. I heard something about Jim Cornette owning Smoky Mountain Wrestling, I think. Anything else? I love this show. Even though we still know everything is as much a work as they can make it, there is still the possibility of something happening. Well, that's the joys of live TV. Anything can happen, right? What can go wrong will go wrong. Kevin Lee responds, Heyman said shut the F up, as in the letter F, the most disgusting letter in the alphabet. Now, if this was a shoot, he'd say the whole thing, not just that one disgusting letter. He doesn't say what makes that letter disgusting. He seems he's very much opposed to the letter F. I wonder if he ripped that key off his keyboard. I mean, does it not shower like the rest of the alphabet? You know what the great thing is about the word fuck? I love saying it and doing it. It's fun to do both. I would argue it's the best letter in the alphabet. October 11th, 1996, Jeremy with the thread put Live Raw instead of Live Wire on Saturday. I don't think he's saying put Raw on Saturday. I just think he's saying instead of making Live Wire live, make Raw live. He says, yes, that's what I'm saying. I heard that McMahon can't put Live Raw every week because it costs much more money than to do a TV taping, or rather than a TV taping. Well, Vince, if you had the money to put Live Wire on Saturday, you should use that money for Live Raw, not Live Wire. Raw is the face of the WWF. Remember that WCW started to take over WWF since they started Nitro. Raw must be all the way live, even if it costs billions of dollars. People say Nitro is getting so predictable. That's kind of true, but at least it's live, so you never really know what's going to happen when you watch it. But Raw, not all WWF fans actually go to the tapings, but the people who did would spread what happened. Oh, spoilers. That's something worse than a predictable show. Come on, Vince, Raw must be live. I lost brain cells reading that post. I wasn't the only one who felt that way either. Wanamaker says, obviously you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Making Livewire live every week is cheaper than making Raw live once a month. With Livewire, they don't have to pay the extra fees of moving equipment and paying people who do move the equipment because Livewire is in their own studio. They never have to move shit other than maybe a computer. And then he signed his post, Wanamaker, I hate Hulk Hogan, and so should you. Bite Me says, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to shoot something in-house where the equipment and crews are already there than go on the road and set everything up, you dumbass. Now, this is the kind of RSPW discourse that I look for. And Silverwolf. Silverwolf brings some common sense into the discussion here. Livewire is taped in their production studio and costs next to nothing to produce. A live Raw would require the cost of the arena rentals. They can't just drop by an arena for free, you know. The paychecks for all the wrestlers and the security and everybody working the event. Your argument is totally impractical and ill-informed. If you don't want to know what happened on Raw, don't read RSPW. It's very simple. Does that sound familiar to anybody? I've used this same argument here 20 years later for people who bitch about spoilers on Facebook and Twitter and on my podcast. And I'm talking about shows that have already aired. Like, if I went on my show and I spoiled, like, the NWA tapings this week, right? They haven't aired yet. They're airing on YouTube this Tuesday. But if I came on my show and I revealed the results to all the matches, that would be a shitty thing for me to do. That is a spoiler. If Ring of Honor has a pay-per-view on a Friday, and this has happened before, Ring of Honor has a pay-per-view that airs live on Friday. I do my show on Sunday. So if I'm talking about the results of that event on Sunday, I'll have people occasionally say to me, well, you just gave away spoilers, that's terrible. And I say to them, no, the show aired already. You haven't watched it yet. That is not a spoiler. People don't understand this concept. So I've had to have these conversations recently. I've had to fight these battles recently. It's like Silverwolf said, don't go on Facebook and don't go on Twitter until you've watched the show if you don't want to be spoiled. It's very simple. Some things never change. And finally, I'll end with this. On another Livewire-related post, there was a reply, like an RKO out of nowhere, from Justin on October 12, 1996. Dear RSPWers, I know Segas are old, but since this is a wrestling news group, I was hoping I could maybe sell my wrestling video games for my Sega. Here are my list of games and prices. Royal Rumble, $20. WWF Raw, $20. WWF WrestleMania the Arcade Game, $30. And my Sega Genesis for $50. I doubt anyone will want to purchase the Sega or any of the games, but if you do, please get back to me ASAP. The Sega is in perfect condition, nothing is wrong with it at all. The games include an instruction booklet. Please don't flame me for posting this on a wrestling news group because I figured since I'm selling wrestling games, it would be alright. If you purchase the Sega only, I will send you NBA Bulls vs. Lakers free of charge. Hope to get a response from one of you. Thanks for your time. I pulled this because it was just so random, and it's like... It was in the middle of like a flame war about Livewire and Todd Pettengill, and then all of a sudden this guy's trying to sell a Sega Genesis here in 1996. A Sega in perfect condition. I'd like to talk to this guy. I might like to buy that. You think Justin still has it for sale? From 1996? Shockingly, nobody did flame him. They were too busy arguing over whether Vic Venom was his real name and wanting to see his birth certificate from his mother's hope chest. That was the discussion that was going on. This has been your weekly reminder that wrestling fans are raving psychos, except for Justin. He seems like a really nice guy. If you have questions for the mailbag, which I am not doing here today, but I am planning on incorporating it into my new YouTube feature, you can still email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. There's going to be a couple of different ways for you going forward to submit questions, so watch for that video. I'm hoping to record that later this week and get that up on the YouTube channel, and maybe that could become a weekly feature. It will let me get to more questions more often, and when I have time, I will get to a few on the show here, but the majority will probably migrate over to the new Sound Off inbox feature, because I also want to prep up the YouTube channel. You know, I want to put more original content on there as well, and this makes it a lot easier for me to do so. So keep emailing me, follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. You can find my Raw review from last Monday, my AEW Dynamite livestream review from Wednesday. All of that is up on the YouTube channel right now. Join me again live this Wednesday after 10 p.m. for AEW Dynamite review on YouTube, and back here next weekend for episode 621 of the Solemonster Sounds Off. I'm out of here. Thank you very much for all the birthday love, all the birthday messages. I very much appreciate that. I'm going to spend the rest of my birthday now doing more work until Hell in a Cell tonight, where I get to do more work. What a great birthday. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and I will see you on YouTube tonight for Hell in a Cell. Take care, guys.
The Solemonster sounds off.
She puts her foot on his chest, and Maria is the new 24/7 champion and the first ever pregnant champion. So she's roaming the hallway. You see all the dweebs who would normally be tripping over themselves to win the ugly green belt. They're just standing there because what are they going to do? They're going to pin a pregnant woman? Hey, if it was me, sure. Yeah, I would. It's like Bobby Heenan said at the 92 Royal Rumble after Ric Flair gave British Bulldog this blatant low blow. Bobby just goes, I'd do that to my grandmother if I had to. Do what needs to be done to be the champion. Sorry, lady.
The Solemonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolemonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Solemonster on Twitter @Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solemonster Sounds Off.